Let me introduce you to our latest sponsor, the Andre Law Firm. Andre Law can represent you or your business in a variety of civil and commercial matters. Do you have a client that has proven difficult to collect from? Andre Law also specializes in collection law and can expedite your collection on judgments from your defaulting clients. The principal of Andre Law Firm is Tony Andre, a North Miami native with years of experience representing businesses and individuals throughout the state of Florida. Based in Aventura, you can give him a call at 786-708-0813 or visit his website at andrelaw.com. Again, give Andre Law a call at 786-708-0813 to set up your consultation.
All right, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor of ours, and it's one that is very relevant to the moment. They're a new division of Greenview Construction, and they are called Making America Clean Again. Making America Clean Again holds certificates in bacterial, viral, fungi, and mold cleaning treatments. They offer professional cleaning, sanitizing, disinfecting, and sterilization services to a wide range of residential and commercial projects. You can do overnight ozone UV generator treatments or even permanently install UV ionized advanced oxidation technology into your HVAC system. Now, we know and understand, and quite frankly, we hope, that businesses across the state and nation remain shuttered as long as absolutely necessary to beat back the spread of the coronavirus. But when that time finally comes, having that certificate to display at your workplace showing that it has been properly cleaned by a licensed professional and maintained will go a long way to restoring that customer trust. So for more information, you can look up Making America Clean Again. You can go to their website at www.macainc.net, or you can just call them at 855-561-6653. Again, that's 855-561-6653.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to part one of our 2020 NFL Draft Preview. We're going to be doing the offense today. I'm Alfredo Arteaga, Simon Clancy is here, Chris Kaufman is here, and we've been talking about quarterbacks for months now. And you guys know all the names, but there's some questions that have come up and you've actually posed to us on the 3 Yards Per Carry Twitter account. And I guess Simon will run them down for you right here.
Given that you're hosting the show, so the first one was, will Miami move to one? I would say not.
No.
I mean, minimal. And I actually think it's arrogant that people say, oh, the Dolphins will just do it. But if the boot was on the other foot, the Bengals, you know, why would the Bengals want to do that? You know,
yeah.
An Ohio kid is going to sell a shitload of shirts.
I do think it's plan A for Miami, though.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen, though.
Probably not. I mean, I agree, probably not, but I think it's plan A for Miami. And if, I mean, we've been off air talking a lot about Justin Herbert and how the NFL likes him better than we do and all this thing, these things. And you're even hearing some people in the media like, or some people that you've talked to, Simon, that are like, don't be that surprised if Justin Herbert goes number one. Well, what if they're like, you know, well, we can get him at number five, you know, and we would take him at number one anyway. So I'm just saying, you never know if there a distressed price tag comes out. Like, remember what happened when we went up for Deion Jordan? The Raiders just gave us that pick for ridiculously below trade chart value.
Yeah.
You know, You never know.
I mean, wasn't it like a second round?
It was a second round.
It moved up from 12 to 3 or something.
I think it was the 42nd pick or something like that. And it was ridiculously below the value, the chart value. And you just never know. And that was, by the way, Reggie McKenzie. And that trade didn't work out for anybody, actually.
Yeah, but you got to think that
when
it comes to a quarterback, I don't think you're going to move up even from 5 to 1 without dumping maybe all of the first round picks this year. Like, I think that's the starting point.
I don't think so. I think just one of the first, you know, the price that if this is plan A for Miami, and I keep hearing that it is, if it's plan A for Miami, I think what's probably on the table is one of the first round picks this year and maybe one next year. And then
to get
we'll
to
see
one,
if they say yes. Yeah, to get to one.
Yeah,
and we'll see if they say yes. And right now, I agree with you, Simon. I don't think Cincinnati's going to say yes. And in fact, I started hearing that Cincinnati kind of wants us to get to three first, and then so that they wouldn't have to move down as far, you know, just from one to three. And that's deal killer, I think, for Miami, because Miami's not going to pay the price to go two steps like that.
But how about this? Let's say that Cincinnati is, you know, all on board. Okay, we like Joe Burrow, and Cincinnati's like, you know what? We can do with Tua Tagovailoa. They move down to five, and then they're going to have Detroit hound them for an asset to get back up to three. That's why
I think they take Justin Herbert. I think they take Herbert anyway. And we'll get to the Herbert thing in a minute.
Right, right.
I think it only happens if they like Justin Herbert. I think that's the only
way. Which I think they do.
Well, the Cincinnati, I think
they
do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. And I think I would strongly suggest that Justin Herbert would be number two on the Bengals board above Tua. Strongly suggest.
Mm-hmm.
The other question
I'm
about
with you.
Cincinnati,
I believe you.
Yeah, yeah. The other question about Cincinnati and that pick is that if Miami, so Peter King said on Monday, Albert Breer said yesterday, which probably was Monday, I can't remember now. I seen Daniel Jeremiah say it as well, that essentially four first rounders is the kind of the number.
Mm.
The question is Joe Burrow essentially three first rounders better than any other quarterback? That's the question I think if you're Miami, you've got to ask yourself. Is Joe Burrow three first round picks better than either Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, or Jordan Love? And to me, the answer is unequivocally no.
No.
I say no, but when I say no, like, I get accused for being biased because, you know, I didn't rate Joe Burrow that much heading into the season. And yeah, I've come a long way on him. But every time I say something that's like, you know, he's not the most awesome number one pick ever, it's like, you know, you just never liked him.
He's not three first round picks better than I'm not a massive Justin Herbert fan, but I don't think Joe Burrow is three first round picks better than Joe Burrow.
No.
Right. The next question then that people keep asking is, will Miami move to three?
Well, if Detroit is, you know, if Detroit has a brain in their head, they're going to have to, I would, if I were Detroit, I'd try to get something out of us. At least 39. At the very least, number 39.
It only works if A, if the Giants are a legitimate threat to give up the pick to somebody. Yeah. Right.
And as we know, Dave Gettleman's never traded down in his entire.
Now, they're trying to signal, though, that they are open for business. So maybe, I mean, it's the Chargers, right? The Chargers at six. It's a stare down between Miami and at five and six. But, you know, the Giants are trying to signal, it seems like, that they're trying to signal that they might be open for business. So if they are.
I think the Giants would be happy either with Simmons, who fits them really well, or one of the tackles. So if you move, if you stay at four, maybe you get Simmons. And if you move to six, maybe, you know, Miami miss out on a quarterback and they take Simmons. It still means the Giants can get Wirfs, Wills, Thomas, or Becton.
I think Thomas is so perfect for the Giants.
But I don't see it happening anyway.
On the other hand, the Lions are not a legitimate threat anymore. Or, you know, they don't have a legitimate they can't even bluff anymore that they're willing to take Tua at three. I think that's over. They got called on it, and I think that Matthew Stafford ruined it. I think that they started signaling it, and I think that Stafford and his wife got upset about it, and they started raising a ruckus, and then all of a sudden the Lions had to, you know, snuff that out just to make him happy.
And the Lions, I got to say this too. I think the Lions are, not only are they in win now mode, but there's two players, Okuda and Isaiah Simmons, that I would say would be their chief targets. And moving down to five, it's conceivable, although not likely, but it's conceivable they'll lose one of them. So I don't think it even makes sense for them to even pick up an asset if that's who they want. Because I could see the Giants pivoting, especially if Okuda or Simmons is staring them right in the face.
So the other question, though,
you know what, but sorry, just to push back a little bit on the Simmons thing with the Lions, they did sign Jamie Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see them as somewhat similar players. I wonder – I wonder if the Simmons guys like Isaiah Simmons are generally, I don't want to use the word hype because I believe he's a fantastic player. They're generally well regarded by us, by NFL, you know, Twitter people and NFL media and stuff like that, because he can do all these things and he's so transcendent and stuff like that. The guys like that, the NFL can sometimes be a little lower on than we are, because it's like, well, where exactly do I play him? You know, what exactly is he really, really, really good at? You know, what position is he really, really good at? And I wonder about that. And the Lions sort of have the same kind of defense we do, which is positionless, which fits him. But you get positionless players at a bargain. You don't pay a premium for them a lot of the time, right? Because you're buying the tweeners that the other guys don't want. And in this case, they'd be paying, you know, a really high premium for that sort of tweener. And I wonder about that sometimes, whereas Jeffrey Okuda just seems like a slam dunk.
Right.
Yeah. So the question though, that I think is probably the biggest overarching question in all of this, or the biggest overarching point in all of this, then, is that there are people within the NFL, and then there are people outside the NFL like us and like fans and those sorts of things. And it feels like the people that are outside the NFL value Tua much higher than people inside the NFL, because I am continually hearing, as I said last week, but continually hearing, and I've heard subsequent from this week to from last week to this week, more people either getting in contact with me or having conversations with them saying it's true. Justin Herbert is more valued within the NFL community than he is outside. And what you might see is, let's say, for example, the Chargers trade to 3, they might not be trading for Tua. They might be trading for Justin Herbert, because they actually know that Miami values Herbert, in inverted commas, that Miami values Herbert more than they value Tua. Whether that's true or not, we don't know.
At least they've been told that.
Yeah, what I'm learning is that a lot of these front offices really value availability over maybe even anticipation or athleticism. They want a guy that's going to be there day in and day out. And we all like Tua Tagovailoa, and we all have him. I'm pretty sure we all have him number one on our boards as far as quarterbacks. But the guy has had a major injury, and he had two other surgeries that they were elective surgeries, but there were surgeries nonetheless. And it spooks NFL front offices to have a guy limping out of games, and for what is now 2 consecutive years.
Availability is your best ability in competition. You can be the greatest player, the greatest competitor, but if you're not available, then a team's going to have to go and find somebody else. I think that's just a fact when it comes to this. So, but overall, I think there's an overarching element to this draft that we as fans, and we're so inured about Tua, but I genuinely believe that there is a pretty big groundswell of people within the NFL who value Justin Herbert more. The question is to why, and I suppose it goes back to prototypes. You know, that there are, you know, a lot of scouts have been doing the job for a long time, and that you have a 6'6", 225-pound, chiseled from a god, incredible arm, incredible intelligence quarterback. I mean, he fits everything that, if you've been in the scouting community for 2 years, then let's go back. Look, it's not that long. You know, Russell Wilson and Drew Brees are the two outliers. Beyond that, it's only been 3-4 years since teams have really started to engage with quarterbacks under the, you know, the size barrier, as it were. I mean, if you were to say 10 years ago that the two first overall picks would be 5 foot, 10 and a half, or whatever Kyler was, and 6 foot flat, and if Tua had stayed healthy, probably three quarterbacks in a row who were under 6 foot one going first overall, you'd have been laughed out of the building. So, you know, you look how long it takes the NFL to prototypes mean an awful lot, and he is the prototype.
Yeah. I think you have to distinguish, though, because I've always seen this. There seems to be a difference, or there seems to be a change that happens between the scouting level and the scouts and the general manager level of the NFL. And I've always noticed this, that the scouts are kind of sort of reading off the same textbook. I often feel like, you know, it's the same book that they all have, and that and it has to be this way. And so for some reasons, important reasons, around the NFL. And I think, yeah, they look at a guy like Justin Herbert, and, you know, he's cut from stone to be an NFL quarterback. And then they look at a guy like Tua Tagovailoa. He's short. He doesn't have as good of an arm. You know, are you sure? They're not going to rate him the same way. I think it's when you get to the general manager level that you start to see people with a little bit better vision for how this is going to project, and also people willing to go off book. You know, people willing to say, you know, Baker Mayfield is the number one quarterback out there, or Kyler Murray is the number one quarterback out there, or Cam Newton, go back a ways, is the number one quarterback out there. I think that when you get to the general manager, and that's why I said this in private, I would be surprised if, when all is said and done, when we get toward the draft, the actual draft, when it comes out, you start to see like these anonymous or these surveys that happen. Bob McGinn is famous for some. Yeah. He likes to collect quotes from the scouts, and he's already published that. But toward the draft, he actually also publishes like, hey, I have asked 22 executives, general managers and executives in charge of their teams to rate these players. And here's how many first place votes, here's how many second, you know, so on and so forth. And he gives a point system and rates the guys. I would still be surprised if, when all of that is done, if somebody comes up with that, if Tua isn't a clear-cut number two behind Joe Burrow, when you start tallying the first place, second place votes among the actual general managers and executives. I know what the scouts are going to be tempted to say, and I know what the scouts are going to be tempted to value. But I think when you get to the general manager, it might be a little bit different.
Yeah, and just a little background on that, because I was looking it up right now, and especially since he just signed with the Dallas Cowboys. But in 2014, I was expressly told that HaHa Clinton Dix was the staff recommendation from the scouts. And they took Juwan James 2 picks right before Clinton Dix was taken. Clinton Dix has been available 5 times since then to the Miami Dolphins. They haven't bit any of those times. So it kind of tells you who really is in charge, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. And when it comes to the Dolphins anyway, you know, I said this before, Brian Flores is going to swing the big hammer, but it's also going to be Chris Greer's final decision. So
with a chunk of Marvin Allen thrown in as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be his board, but in the end, it's going to be, you know, Chris Greer giving the final say on who it is. And I wouldn't be surprised if even Marvin Allen's board has somebody say Justin Herbert above Tua Tagovailoa or something like that. But the pick is Tua Tagovailoa, because that's the guy that, from a leadership standpoint and from a team building standpoint, that Brian Flores really jives with. I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happens. You know, we're talking about the grading system where somebody has like a, I forget what the grades are out of, but something like a 7.32 versus a 7.31 or something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It wouldn't be surprised me if in the end, the pick is the guy that Flores is most comfortable with.
All right, to wrap up the quarterbacks, what were you saying, Simon?
No, I was just going to say, leadership.
Absolutely.
The ability to sell shirts. You're not going to get that with Justin Herbert. You are going to get it with Tua. You're going to get a bit of, you know, you're going to make South Florida relevant, South Florida football relevant again if you draft Tua. Because, yes. You know, how many people in the NFL, how many players in sport generally are known by one name?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it counts for something that he is the star that he is. He doesn't court celebrity, and he's not a celebrity per se. But, you know, when Tua is your quarterback, people are going to start talking about the Miami Dolphins again. People are going to start buying shirts. his name. That's
all right. And to wrap up the quarterbacks, I think most of us have them taking another one either late or as an undrafted free agent. So we're basically talking about from 200 to 300 as far as the top prospects in this year's draft. Do you see them taking somebody in the sixth, Simon?
Yeah, I think they'll double down and take somebody because I think they'll ultimately they'll probably get rid of I think they'll get rid of Josh Rosen. It wouldn't surprise me if they traded him. And I've said before that, you know, I think the Green Bay Packers will be a good landing spot for him. I like Jake Luton. I think he's somebody that I know that Dolphins have spent time going to see last season. The kid out of Oregon State, he's big, 6'5", 6'6", 225 pounds. I think he's a I think he's an intriguing sort of developmental type, good size, he's accurate. He's a play action passer. You watch the games and he does a lot of play action. And I think he's I think he's a decent sort of, like I said, decent late round developmental guy. Hasn't thrown a lot of interceptions. I think it was 6 or 7 over the last couple of seasons, you know, so he's I think he's an interesting guy with a decent arm, nice touch on his throws. He's somebody I like later on.
All right, Chris.
I don't think they're going to use a pick on another quarterback. I think, you know, as an undrafted free agent, they might look at some guys. I know I've heard that they've that they were sniffing around Eric Dungy, formerly Syracuse quarterback, and Jordan Tamu. I think both of them were coming out off of the XFL. And I really wouldn't be surprised. Both of them, first off, the thing they have in common is that they're very mobile. And I think that's important when you're looking at Chan Gailey, who going all the way back to when he was here with the Dolphins in 2001, the thing he appreciated about Jay Fiedler was that he was, you know, you might not have been a greatest athlete as far as, you know, being like a 4.4 runner or something like that, but he was quick twitch. Yeah. And he can move. And I think that that's what Chan Gailey appreciated about him. That's what he appreciates about Ryan Fitzpatrick. You look at what he did in Kansas City with Tyler Thigpen. You go all the way back to Steelers days with Cordell Stewart. He's always appreciated this about quarterbacks. So, you know, if you're looking for the undrafted free agents and who Miami might be interested in that way, I think you've got to look at those types. But also it could not be a quarterback from this class at all. It could be from, you know, like I said, somebody like Tamu, or if he hasn't already signed somewhere, or maybe Eric Dungy or somebody like that.
Yeah. And I'm still on my guy, Khalil Tate from Arizona. You kind of talked me off of using a 6th round pick, because the more I look at it and the more I watch these lists come out of the top 500 prospects, the more he seems to drop. And there seems to be a bevy of well-known college players at quarterback late in this draft. You have the Nate Stanleys, the Shea Pattersons, all these guys, you know, Steven Montez, all of these guys, I think, are going to garner more attention than Khalil Tate. So Khalil Tate could be a UDFA you could watch that could be a hot property, because, you know, if I'm the XFL, this is a guy that can run. He could throw it through. He could throw it a mile. He's fun to watch. I think he could be a guy that the XFL could look at.
You know, it's not just that he can throw it a mile. It's just, you have to look at the way he throws the football. It's a lot like, it reminds me of Jordan Love, the way he throws the football, especially on the move. He's got a really good arm and probably 4 or 5 speed. I don't know if he's been timed or not. I don't know if he's healthy or unhealthy or whatever, but yeah, he's definitely a guy to watch. And especially as an undrafted free agent, I think he'd be right up what Chan Gailey wants as sort of a developmental dude.
All right. Now let's move on to running backs. Most mocks, especially since, well, they did get, you know, they got Jordan Howard, but most mocks now have the Dolphins taking a running back in that 1st round. And the name that always seems to come up, because they've been tied to him so much, including by us, the first time in December when I revealed that some elements inside the Dolphins really like J.K. Dobbins. And as it turns out, yeah, it's Eric Studsville who likes J.K. Dobbins a lot. That's the Dolphins running backs coach. Simon, is it as simple as J.K. Dobbins is who we have to watch for that pick 26, or you have other ideas?
I mean, I think you could throw a blanket over all of these guys, frankly, and I think you could easily choose any one of the top five. And by top five, I say DeAndre Swift, J.K. Dobbins, Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, and Cam Akers, not in that order, but I think you could make a fairly strong case for any of those five as being the guy. I thought it was interesting that he got Dobbins in the door, but then Studsville ran the Jonathan Taylor Pro Day, the Wisconsin Pro Day. I'm led to believe that they're very high both on Swift and Edwards-Hilaire as well. And I think you can make a strong case for any of them fitting, really. And if you said the Dolphins are going to draft Cam Akers, I wouldn't be surprised. If you said they're going to draft J.K. Dobbins, I wouldn't be surprised. If you're going to say they're going to draft Edwards-Hilaire, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think what they're looking for is somebody that can you know, factor into both facets of the game. You know, Taylor is not, you know, is the weakest in inverted commas in terms of you know, catching the ball. And I think you look at someone like Edwards-Hilaire and DeAndre Swift, and they could potentially be Alvin Kamara types. So it's, and then you look at a guy like J.K. Dobbins, for example, who just continues to show up massively in big games.
Yeah.
So I really, unless you really know what the Dolphins want, I think you can make a pretty strong case for all of them. I know we all pretty much like all of them for what they bring to the table. We've probably all got slightly different orders. I think I've got Swift 1, I've got Edwards-Hilaire 2, Taylor 3, Dobbins 4, Akers 5. We've probably all got a slight variation on that, but I don't think you can go wrong with any of them, frankly. I think they're all decent players, and I think and it goes back to something I've said frequently is, you look at someone like Jonathan Taylor, just don't overlook really good college players. Because he looks like a guy that will just come in, start from day one. And really, realistically, with running backs, you're talking about a four-year deal, really and truly, because, teams are moving further and further and further away from paying, making big money deals, second contracts with players, because the downside, guys are falling off cliffs pretty quickly. And so really, you're looking at, people talk about, Taylor's got a lot of yards on the clock, and he does. But realistically, you're probably only talking about 4 years. So I think they're all really good players.
The way I have it, I have it nearly the same as you, except I do have Cam Akers above some of the other guys here. And that's where, nice, I think I end up disagreeing with a lot of people. I do have DeAndre Swift number one and Clyde Edwards-Helaire number two. I think those are the guys I watch. And they excite. A running back's really got to excite you, right? Mm. I mean, you got to watch them, and they've really got to excite you because of what they can do. Wow you with the football. I mean, they're the guys that handle the football most on the offense, aside from the quarterback, and I'm not counting the center. You want them to wow you with what they can do. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is electric. He's absolutely unbelievable in the things that he does with the football in his hands. And DeAndre Swift is like that too. So I think they deserve their spots at number one. Even though J.K. Dobbins is a solid player and he does show up, and I think Jonathan Taylor is a solid player and he does show up as well. But the feeling I get from Taylor is actually he is a physical specimen. He's a very good athlete. But I think that he uses that a little bit, and he plays kind of patient. Some people will say patient, some people will say slow. He plays patiently because he knows that he can get bailed out with his athleticism. And to me, I wonder if that's a lack of vision, that he's being patient to try and aid his vision and see things a little bit better. Whereas I think some other players might get away with playing faster because they have a little bit better vision. I like Cam Akers above Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins because I think he's got good vision. I think he really does excite me, and he makes things happen. He makes people miss. He breaks tackles a lot. But either way, like you said, throw a blanket over these four players. And I might even toss an extra guy in there to throw a blanket over, and that's AJ Dillon of Boston College. But yeah, if the Dolphins are valuing J.K. Dobbins, though, Eric Studsville, they would probably also value Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And that's because these guys are these are the only two among those that are not fumblers. And sorry, did I say four of them? They're five of those guys, obviously. Yeah. So yeah, those are the two that are not fumblers. J.K. Dobbins and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are the guys that don't fumble the football. DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, and Cam Akers have some fumble history there.
Yeah, especially Jonathan Taylor, who has 18 fumbles in three seasons.
Oh yeah, like.
And lost 15 of them. So
yeah, 18, I mean,
that's 18 fumbles in 41 games.
Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? That's a lot. And, you know, Cam Akers has some too, and DeAndre Swift has some.
I've got the numbers here. So DeAndre Swift has four. Taylor has 18.
Yeah, Jake not in his whole career. Right?
Oh, no, this is, yeah, sorry, this is 2020. So this was last season.
Yeah.
So, oh, no, no. This is career fumbles by top. By 2020, so Swift has four, Taylor has 18, Dobbins has three, Akers has nine.
Had more than that.
AJ Dillon has eight. Anyway, it's a lot.
Yeah, I got a different, I got a completely different order than you guys.
When you break it down per carry, I think, I have seven for Swift in his career.
Yeah, I got Dobbins, Taylor, Swift, Akers, Helaire in that order, and. I tend to value what
Taylor Swift.
Right? No, I was gonna say the same thing.
Yeah, I got Taylor Swift. Yes, 2-3. But I tend to value the home run hitters. And if there is a knock on Helaire, he has a really good jump cut, especially in the hole, and he does press the hole. He's a smart runner, but you don't see the 80-yard run.
You do, though. You do. You see, I don't think that's right. I've seen him run away from guys. You know, you see him run at the combine. He runs the four, low 4.5 or high 4.5, whatever it is. There was a game back end of last season where he just ran away from guys. I think it might have been Arkansas. And it was just like, it was back end of the game and at home. And I just thought, you know, he's going to get caught. He's going to get caught. He's down the side, right sideline. He's not getting caught. And he was running away from defensive backs. And he's just like, you know, he's not quick. But you don't see a lot of people catching him from behind.
Yeah, so. and let me just say that when I give a knock here, it's not that I'm saying that I hate the guy, because I would gladly take Edwards-Helaire on my team, and I'd take him with a high pick too. So, but I also don't like how much he seeks contact for a guy his size, a guy under 220 pounds. Yeah, because – I don't know. I don't think that that's a style that's going to translate well to the NFL. I think he's asking for a lot of knick-knack injuries. And that's part of what makes him exciting too, is that, you know, he'll run you over, he'll run through tackles. I'd rather see him avoid people, which he does well. You know, like I said, it's not a knock. I just like these other guys better. But yeah, that's the only knock I could really put on Helaire. I don't see him running away from people like Dobbins can and has.
Looking at missed tackles per attempt. Mm-hmm. If you were to look at that, the guy who probably stands out above everybody, you know, in this draft, I mean, Travis Etienne stands out above everybody, mm-hmm. but he's not out. So forget that.
And he would have been my one, by the way.
Right, he would have been mine as well. Is Zach Moss of Utah. I don't have him rated that highly because I'm a little confused as to what he is, because he's sort of a bigger player that doesn't play big at all. Like, he doesn't play strong.
No, and I think and I didn't like that he came in hyped as he was gonna run a really good time at the combine and then ran slow.
So yeah, I mean, I also don't think he's fast. He was hurt, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's fast.
He's like, who's that player that used to play for the running back? He used to play for the Chargers.
You're not talking about, how far back are you going here?
10, 12 years.
Natron Means?
No, after. No, that's. Anyway.
LaDainian?
No, God no.
God, no. I was going to say.
He's just a guy that seeks out contact. I'll think of it before the end of the show. He's a guy that just seeks out contact. And I just think that kind of wear and tear on his body.
Mm.
Just not for me.
But so I think that, though, as you go down the list in this draft, Cam Akers is really high. He's 15th down the list of, you know, like 200 some odd running backs as far as missed tackles per attempt, as well as, like, he does really well in yards after contact too. And then you've also got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's right there, 14 and 15. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Cam Akers, really high. And then, of course, there's Lynn Bowden right behind them. He's the quarterback, yeah. You know, slash running back, slash we don't know what he is.
Yeah. He's Randall Cobb, kind of, isn't he?
Yeah, I think of him as an Antoine Randall-L, personally.
Marion Butts, that's the guy.
Marion Butts. Wow, you really did go back. Wow. That's not 10, yeah. That's not 10, 12 years ago, Simon.
Probably isn't. God, it just says how old I am.
Yeah.
When did, God, and that was, Jesus, 1993.
That was Tecmo Super Bowl, man.
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
25 years ago. Christ.
But I think those guys grade out really well that way. And I tend to be impressed by that. I tend to be impressed by guys who can create missed tackles, who can create yards after contact, have really good elusiveness and, you know, great power and stuff like that. And that's why I end up looking at Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Cam Akers a lot, and maybe not so much Dobbins or Taylor, because they don't do that as much as
And you have to remember about Akers as well, high school player of the year, you know, the number one ranked player in the nation, who played on a terrible team with bad coaching behind a terrible offensive line.
Yes.
It's blooper city. It's like watching a cartoon.
So bad. And he's the type of guy where you just think could end up being rookie of the year because he's got so much talent.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's kind of slightly off the radar, could run for 1,500 yards and nobody would blink an eye because he really is that good.
And the Dolphins have been talking to him. I know that, a fair amount. So they're on to him.
Okay, and wrapping up the running backs, I think, although I can't guarantee this, but I think they're going to take one high because we've been talking about it, and all indications are that they will take one high, but that room is still kind of barren. At the end of the draft, you might just still have two guys, so you might need a third. So who is it that you might like late in this draft, Simon, to fill out that running back room?
There's a few guys I quite like. I really like LaMichael Perine of Florida, actually. Mm-hmm. Not fast, catches the ball really well, blocks well, runs well, never fumbled. Not one fumble in college. I really like him. I think he's just a really solid player. I think if you look, I think there's some value in DJ Dallas, the local kid from Miami. Mm-hmm. I think he's the best pass protecting running back in the draft. And then a couple of other guys, Joshua Kelly of UCLA, who I know the Dolphins like, Darrington Evans of Appalachian State. There'd be some guys I'd focus on late on.
Yeah, and those are basically all the guys that I like, especially Perine. Perine reminds me a lot of Mike Gillisley. Remember Mike Gillisley?
Yeah, I like Perine a lot.
And DJ Dallas was just, you know, he was a favorite down here, of course.
Perine was another guy who showed up big time in big games.
Absolutely. Yeah. Chris, anybody you got your eye on?
I think that first off, you're going to have to look at A.J. Dillon, and because I don't really have a great sense for where the NFL has him. I think the NFL should have him high. He's the Boston College running back. He is a monster, an absolute monster. And if you look at him, you're kind of reminded a little bit of Derrick Henry in how powerful and how big and how monstrous he is. But remember, Derrick Henry had that weird build that threw a lot of people off, right? Yeah. Like people didn't know some people, when they looked at Derrick Henry, it just didn't compute because of the way he was built. A.J. Dillon is not built like that. He's built just like a monster and like a running back. So I think that I'm not saying he's better than Derrick Henry, because I was really, really high on Derrick Henry, but he is a monster like that. And I think that wherever he goes is probably going to be a good pick. The other guy that I look at for a real late round pick is Michael Warren of Cincinnati. And that's another guy who creates a lot of missed tackles through his power. He is a load bearing running back for the Cincinnati Bearcats. And I've watched a lot of them because we've all talked about, you know, the quarterback that we all like there, as well as the tight end, Josiah DeGuara. Desmond Ritter's the quarterback's name. I was forgetting his name momentarily. But yeah, I've watched a lot of their football, and Michael Warren, that was above all a running back driven offense when it's at its best. And it's he's the engine. Michael Warren was the engine, and he came out this year. And I think that that's a really good pick. Other guys, you guys have named the ones that I like, whether it's Joshua Kelly or somebody like that. But those would be the ones I'd keep an eye on. I don't really have a great sense for them all. I think that Benny LeMay of Charlotte maybe somebody to look at too.
I like it's interesting Taylor as well at Arizona.
Yeah. It's funny actually how Charlotte has produced three guys this year that you actually kind of want to keep an eye on, right? Alex Highsmith, Cameron Clark,
the left guard.
Yeah. And Benny LeMay. So
you can although you can always take Kellen Ballage part two and Patrick Taylor of Memphis. Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think anybody wants Kellen Ballage part two.
Yeah.
Patrick Taylor is so much like Kellen Ballage. It's uncanny. By the way, Chris, you were asking that you didn't know where the NFL would have AJ Dillon. I have in front of me the list from CBS Sports, their prospect ranking. They have traditionally been pretty damn close as far as ranking their guys. And they got him as the 156th best prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I was seeing
fifth rounder type.
Draft Network has him right about there, too. And I think that's not right. I think he should go higher than that based on his monstrosity. And, I mean, he's 250 pounds at 6'0". And he runs. I mean, he is an athlete. He can run. I mean, he can jump. He's explosive. He's everything. He's everything that you could – just about everything that you could want.
All right. Now, let's move on to wide receiver. And it really is a shame that – I guess it's not a shame. I guess it's a luxury that the Dolphins have Preston Williams and Devontae Parker. And they have some guys around the edges like Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant, Isaiah Ford that they kind of like, but this is one hell of a free agent class. I mean, wide receiver class. And Simon, I don't see how they'll spend a top 100 pick on one, but it has to be tempting. Would it be tempting for you?
Yeah, of course, because don't forget Devontae Parker's really just coming off 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great year, but it was 1 year. Preston Williams was an undrafted free agent coming off a torn ACL. You've got questions over Jakeem Grant, as much as we like him, but, you know, can he stay healthy? We've got questions over Albert Wilson, who hasn't been healthy, started to look really good the last two or three games of the season, but carries a big cap number. Then you've got Isaiah Ford, you know, kind of roster bubble, just a guy. You've got Alan Hearns, got the contract, but essentially
just a guy.
Yeah, just a guy. You know, so I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that they'll look to do that. And I've seen people, I saw Daniel Jeremiah give Miami Henry Ruggs in the first round of his recent mock draft. So, if you're drafting Tua, then, you're going to want to give the guy weapons. It's why obviously we're talking about getting a really good running back. Well, I'm not sure that we're 100% set at the wide receiver position either. I don't think you'd necessarily see a first round pick, given that you could make an argument that 20, 25 wide receivers would go in the first three and a half rounds. It's that good a class. And you're going to get guys in the third round that you probably get borderline first round in most other years. There's some really good talent out there. So, I've got it Judy at one, LaVisca Chenault at two, CD Lamb at three, Justin Jefferson at four, Ruggs at five. But I could make a case for God, Brandon Ayuk, Michael Pittman.
Jesus.
You stole me.
I had that exact ranking. You're such an asshole.
Oh, sorry, dude. And a guy I love and have loved for a long time, Jace Prochet at SMU, John Hightower at Boise. There's a lot of really good receivers, I think, in this draft. That, but you look at a guy like Judy, absolutely elite route runner, LaVisca Chenault. You can, God, what a creative offensive coordinator could do with him. A guy that can play inside, outside, runs much faster than he did at the combine because of the injury. He can go up and get the ball, can play quarterback, can play wildcat quarterback, can play running back. He's just an absolute phenomenon. CeeDee Lamb, just brilliant after the catch. Justin Jefferson's if Jerry G's number one route runner, Justin Jefferson's 1A, and just, moved inside. Joe Brady moved into the slot this year. And he's just so good at finding open areas in the zone. And Ruggs is, he's an absolute, he's an absolute burner, but he's more than just a burner as well. So I just think there's some great receiver talent in this draft, and I think you're going to find that into the third, into the fourth, and but you're going to end up getting starting receivers in the fifth and sixth round because you know that's just how good it is. You know, we haven't even talked about T. Higgins, for God's sake. You know,
no, you know. I think that the first round for me, the first round, the only guys I would consider there for taking in that round would be Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb and Laviska Shenault, and or Jerry Jeudy to be exact, Laviska Shenault and then CeeDee Lamb. But you know, I could go back and forth between CeeDee and Laviska a little bit, to be honest, because I got to be sensitive to the injury issues with Laviska. I mean, he's got an injury history. He couldn't even get through the combine and not get injured. So I think that it's fair. He is a monster. I think that you would like the three guys for different reasons. To me, CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy are more ready to play in the NFL and run routes and really play off of leverage in the NFL right away. I think Laviska Shenault is just a monster, an absolute monster. And I think that he could be the best of all of them down the road somewhere. But looking at the way Jerry Jeudy runs, he just plays at a different speed. His foot contact is so solid, and he plays in such control of everything. His speed, his change of direction, his gearing is wonderful. CeeDee Lamb's gearing is wonderful too.
I like his feet. He has very light feet, and it's something you want to see in wide receivers. Jerry Jeudy has it. CeeDee Lamb not so much. Even though I have CeeDee Lamb as the number one wide receiver. Really?
I think he does too. He has good balanced foot contact, I think. And good excellent control of his gearing and control of his speed. And what I think both of them where they both separate themselves from other players is their eyes and how much they can see and how quickly they can see it and how quickly they can play off of it. And I think that goes for CeeDee Lamb, you really see that in him after the catch, where he's cutting against the grain, you know, at exactly the right moment, very quickly. And so you look at it and these guys just blow by him and he creates angles that you might not have even seen just as from an overhead view.
Sorry.
So, yeah, I think that you see that in CD after the catch, but you also see it before. You also see it during the route. Like, he can see defensive back leverage and play off of it, and I think that that's what makes him special. I think that Jerry Jeudy is the same way. And I think that Laviska Shenault is just like the monster, and the monster, you got to say something with it because the monster sometimes becomes – what's his name? Mike, the guy in Tampa Bay.
Evans.
Mike Evans. So I adored him coming out because he was just a monster. And I think that sometimes the monster becomes Mike Evans. So that's why I have those three guys there. I think that Justin Jefferson is a really good wide receiver. And he obviously a slot specialist and he can play really well.
And he had a huge combine.
Sure. And he does. I mean, he plays pretty fast and he can run pretty well. I don't know if he's special or not, as far as just the talent that's there, how fast he plays and stuff like that. I think that he's just such a guy. He's dependable. Mm-hmm. And because
imagine him in New Orleans in the slot.
Right. There. Exactly. You know, and you know, he's dependable. You can plug him right in. And to me, that makes him kind of the lead of the second rounders, really the way I would have it.
Then you've got like Denzel Mims and Jalen Reagor and KJ Hamler and Brian Evans and
Ruggs I would put ahead of Reagor.
Reagor.
And that's because I think that you can tell with Ruggs, I mean it's legit speed, right? Like there's speed and then there's speed and then there's Ruggs. There's Ruggs speed.
Destroys pursuit angles.
He's not special like Tyreek Hill or somebody like who's also that fast. It's not like that, but you know, it reminds you a lot of like a Brandon Cooks though. At least.
Yeah, he's not John Ross though either.
Yeah, no, he's not John Ross either.
He's more nuanced.
So he's a little bit more nuanced, and it does remind me of Brandon Cooks, I think. But I think Jalen Reagor goes a little bit behind him because the feeling I got from Reagor, even though he looks really good and he plays really well and I know that he can jump a mile and he can really is that he was victimizing some pretty poor, poor competition. And so I think that when he gets that bump up and he's got, and what did he run, like 4.47 at the combine or something like that?
No, he ran slower.
Yeah. And he's not the Ruggs speed. Like he's not there, which is fine. They don't all have to be. I just don't get the feeling that he's going to come out there blowing everybody away right away. And then he's going to have the big step up in competition. And I wonder how that's going to work out.
The good thing for him though, is he's going up against Jeff Gladney every day in practice. He's going to get more out of that than he almost did in any game that he played for TC all season long, because Gladney's an absolute stud.
Sure. But I mean, yeah, he got some out of that, but I don't know that. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see how it works out, because we haven't seen how that went. And then T. Higgins, I always thought of as being a little bit overrated. I mean, I don't know how you guys have felt about it. Now we're starting to get, for me, kind of in the third roundish area, because with a guy like T. Higgins, I think that you can almost take like an Antonio Gandy Golden, and it's similar. Or you could take a Brian Edwards of South Carolina, and it's similar, you know. Or Donovan Peoples Jones, not quite the same as those other guys, but I think that there's some similarities there. But the guy who separates in the second round for me, that I would almost want to put at the top of the second round, is Tyler Johnson. I really love him. He is such a great wide receiver in every aspect of the game to me. And I look at what he did against Auburn. He absolutely dominated them. He's a great zone guy. I mean, he clearly can see everything and sit down in between zones and do a lot of damage that way. But I think he's also a good against man coverage too. And I think that he's, you know, he didn't run and he's probably not all that fast. No. But I would still look at him in that second round area and take him.
Fourth highest yards per route versus man coverage in the wide receiver class.
Lance Zierlein has his comparable as A.J. Brown. Yes, please, right?
Yeah, right. I don't think that quite gets it. Like, you know, nails what he is. Well, maybe. He's not that big and powerful. Right
now. It's not.
No, he isn't. But
he's over 200 pounds. He's pushing almost 208 pounds.
And when you say that he did so much damage against man, what's funny about that is when you look at him, you're looking at him and you're kind of like, this is a guy who threatens to only be good against zone, actually, in the NFL level, because you're wondering if he's got the physical goods to consistently beat man coverage.
I think he does.
I think in the end he does.
I think Johnson separates because he's nuanced as a route runner, he's nuanced as a mover. I don't think he's ever going to run away from people, but I think he'll get underdrafted because people think he can't run. And then when he gets in the NFL and he catches 55 balls as a rookie and 10 touchdowns, and everyone's like, oh, wow, you know, we really overplayed the fact that he can't run. Well, he can get open in a phone booth.
Yeah, and I think he belongs in that second round area right up there with like Justin Jefferson or somebody like that.
Now, let me ask you about this guy, because I've been watching him since he first stepped on the field for Penn State, and that's KJ Hamler. Every time they measure him, he gets smaller and smaller. Every time he talks, he keeps saying he's faster and faster, but he never runs a 40 anywhere. I think these are huge turnoffs for me. Are they turnoffs for you, Simon?
No, I don't think so. I think he's the walking definition of a home run hitter for me. He is an absolute, you know, every time I see Penn State play, the thing for me is he's got to stay healthy. But I think he's got incredible explosion off the ball. You know, I don't think he needs to run a 40 because he's just got electric. You just watch him, I mean, he just runs away from corners. I think he can beat coverage by a number of means, either flat out flying or the fact that I think his in route speed is really good. He doesn't slow down as a route runner. And I just think if he's healthy, he can score from anywhere on the field. And I just don't know that – I just don't think you can undervalue guys like that. I mean, I think he's a pure slot guy, but you can move him around. I just think he's a really, really good player.
And Chris?
Well, I guys that are that small, you better be super-duper fast.
Yeah.
Like, and he is, but do we know? I mean,
well, he keeps telling everybody that he runs sub 4.3, and he was made the favorite by Bovada to win.
I tell everybody I run sub 4.3 too.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. He was made the favorite by Bovada to have the best 40 time at the combine. And then he did an interview where he said he guaranteed he was going to run sub 4.3. The combine came around, and he said he tweaked his hamstring and he couldn't run. He's done that three times already. He refused to run at a pro day also. So, like, what's that about? I'm smelling that he runs 4.5, and he doesn't want anybody to see it, especially since he's less than 160 pounds.
There's 0% chance he runs 4.5. I mean, you just have to watch the game. There's no way he runs 4.5.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that because I think that there's a perception thing with these small guys with these short legs that they're always running a little bit faster than they actually are. And, you know, when I watch him, I'm watching guys gaining on him, you know, from behind. And if you're Henry Ruggs, that's not happening. You know, I don't remember that ever happening with Henry Ruggs. If you're that small, I have to see it. Like, I have to see it. He's not making those angles disappear the way that I expect somebody with Ruggs speed to do. And so I have to see it. I have to see it, you know, and if I don't see it, then, and that's where this whole COVID situation with no pro days and stuff like that has really screwed some things up. And I know that we've talked about it last week that the NFL are like, or NFL teams are receiving videos and they're like, unless we've seen it personally, we're throwing it out because you don't know if that's a 39 yard dash or you can even do clever things with the frame rate and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, so you never know.
So John Reed, who was the safety that played at Penn State, said that
He would put him on his relay
4x100. Right? Yeah, and he said that because Reed ran a 4.4 and said that KJ was a sub 4.4, and said that KJ was faster than him, and said that KJ had run a 4.27. Now the Penn State track is very fast, but nevertheless,
yeah. I love the player.
I run a 4.27 at campus. College tends to turn into a 4.44 at the NFL Combine somehow.
I love the player. I just don't like that he keeps getting smaller each time they measure him, and he never runs the 40. He never wants.
If they put a sausage sandwich on someone's back and get them to run down the road, I could run a 4.2 as well, chasing off.
All right, that wraps up the wide receivers, and I don't think we're going to spend too much time on this position. Tight ends, I don't think it's a particularly great group. Maybe I'm wrong. Am I wrong, Simon?
No, it's a really bad group. I think it's the worst group in the draft this year, frankly. It's the weakest position in the draft, and actually by some distance. I thought they struggled generally at the Senior Bowl. Nobody really stood out at the combine. I thought Adam Trautman was probably the best of a bad bunch. I actually thought he performed pretty well in Mobile. Especially despite his inexperience against that kind of top level talent. I think he's pretty athletic. He's pretty fluid. He can block pretty well. And then it's just a bunch of guys, really. I mean, Cole Kmet is, you know, he's emerged off the because he's got this intriguing skill set. People trying to talk him up as though he's Jimmy Graham, but it's kind of his skill set outweighs his actual production. I mean, the number of catches he has, you know, he lacks that kind of dynamism, but he's big and he can, you know, he's gangly. I like Thaddeus Moss. I love the bloodlines. I love what he did at LSU, obviously, as a move tight end. But actually, I think he's got some ability as a blocker as well. I think you can see he just needs a little bit of refinement. His hands tend to get a little bit too far outside. So I think he's going to get called for holding quite a bit. And then, you know, Bryson Hopkins of Purdue, Albert O. I mean, he runs, you know, he ran a 4.4. So, you know, he's clearly going to be a seam threat. But he's not, you know, there's always been that knock against him that he's not tough. And we drafted one of those in Michael Agnew. And look what happened there. So, you know, that would be a concern about him. The kid I like, Chris and I have talked about, we've all talked about, is CJ O'Grady, a bit of the head case, but he's an absolute monster when he's got the ball in his hands. And, you know, if he's right, if his head's right, it's a big if. But with, you know, you've got a team that's got 14 picks, you know, and I think he did a really good job of apparently of kind of allaying team's concerns a little bit. At the combine and stuff, but you know, I think he's well worth a punt in the late rounds. But it's not a great group for me.
Yeah, I was looking at it myself, and I just couldn't bring myself to get excited about this group. And I kind of did like Colby Parkinson of Stanford, but then I saw Gil Brandt say that he's a early day two pick, and I'm out. I'm out for that. I just wouldn't spend the pick. So I don't know. What do you see, Chris? Is there anything you like?
Parkinson, too. I looked at Parkinson, too, and I just – yeah, there are things I like. It's just I don't like the class. And I think that for all the reasons that Simon said, but what I would add to it is, like, when my favorite guys in the class are all sort of mid, late round pick, undervalued types, then it's not a good class. You know, yeah. Adam Trautman, I think, is legitimately good. I think that if you're going to make a name for yourself in the NFL as a tight end nowadays, it's going to be because you're doing pretty well as a receiver. And yeah. Adam Trautman can receive the football. I mean, he's got great hands and he can run. And I think that that's where he stands to make an impact. But after that, it's like, yeah, I really like Harrison Bryant, for example, of Florida Atlantic. You know, I think that he was absurdly productive for the college level. It's sort of disappearing. Production out of the tight end position is disappearing in college, but he was very productive at the college level. He can play in line. He's big, you know. I think he can play. Yeah, I like Josiah DeGuara. He's a little bit of a smaller H-back type, though. A smaller H-back type that doesn't have, like, Dallas Clark speed, you know. And then Cheyenne O'Grady, who is a head case and not particularly fast. He's just a guy that for a 6'4", 250-pounder kind of reminds you a little bit of the way that I thought Travis Kelce in college had a certain way about him and the way that he was able to bully people around physically. And I don't just mean blocking. I mean, like, you know, in the receiving game and after the catch and stuff like that. Cheyenne O'Grady, when I get excited about him, that's what I get excited about. And it's not because he's a great blocker. He's really kind of a middling blocker. It's not about that. It's about what he can do in the passing game by being a physically dominant force. And I think that he does have some athleticism, but he's kind of like a really poor man's Travis Kelce. So it's not like we're talking about Travis Kelce here. He's been suspended 3 times. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the head case part of it. So Josiah DeGuara, I think, is, you know, he might end up being the best in the class, in my opinion. And I know that some NFL teams are really getting on to him lately, but I think he came to the school as a wide receiver, and he came out like 6'3", 245 pounds as a tight end. So he's got receiver skills. He was a go-to for Desmond Ridder. If you watched a lot of Desmond Ridder, you know that he was just kind of his safety blanket. So you like that. And he's the guy that, you know, I still go back to it. And Chase Young, whatever you think of Chase Young, Josiah DeGuara could handle him, you know, and as a blocker. So, you know, he's just an all-around player. And yet at the same time, you're like, well, dude, you're 6'3" and 245 pounds. And what are you, like, you're in the solidly in the 4.7s or something like that? Mm. It's not like that we're talking about a premier player. So overall, you know, I would go and look at those types of players, the Harrison Bryant, Josiah DeGuara, maybe CJ O'Grady, Trautman, you're not going to probably get your hands on because he's going to go fairly early, but it's not going to excite me.
Your thoughts on Colby Parkinson? I asked you to look at him a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know what he is. I mean, he's not a great blocker. And yet he's just like
giant.
He's big. He's 6'7" and he's a giant, but he's kind of stiff and he's not really running away from anybody. You watch him and man coverage and like
his hands are clean though. Switch. His hands are really clean.
Yeah, his hands are clean, but I mean you watch him do those switch routes and stuff like that and he's got a guy in man and it's not even a fast guy in man and it's just like easily keeping up with him and it's like, oh, he's not really pressing anybody here. So Durham Smith, if we looked at,
yeah,
we don't even think that highly of him, right? But, no. But he had good hands. He had good hands, and he could catch the ball in traffic. He's not going to run away from anybody.
Do you know what Colby Parkinson's spark number is?
His what?
His spark number.
Oh, spark, no. What is it?
Well, if Cole Kmet is 77.4, have a guess what Colby Parkinson's is.
40-something. No, I don't really know spark that well. But
18.
18, nice.
1-8.
Wow.
Oh, Harrison Bryant.
Well, I mean, look at it.
Harrison Albert Bryant, 14.7.
Albert O is the guy, right? Yeah. That's the
he's a spark beast.
He's a spark beast, and yet he's way down the board because nobody likes him.
Yeah. Well, before we move on to sexier positions, I know it's hard to think of the offensive line as sexy, but it is this year, especially for the Miami Dolphins. I saw this prop bet, and I forgot to ask you guys this question. We had just spoken about the wide receivers. Over or under, Simon, 18 wide receivers taken in the first 100 picks?
There'll be more than 18 in the first 100, definitely.
More than 18? Okay, Chris?
Yeah. I have no idea. I'll say over for whatever reason.
Copycat. Okay.
I'll take the over, too.
I should have set up on the opposite side of Simon. I blew that one.
Screwed that up, mate.
Yeah.
All right. Offensive tackles. There's a big four, Simon.
Okay. Yeah. There's a big four, but there's, you know, and we've all got, it's like running backs. We've all got it slightly differently. I've got Jedrick Wills, Tristan Wirfs, Mekhi Becton, and Andrew Thomas. But I could make a case for Thomas. I went back and watched some Isaiah Wilson, and you just get drawn to Andrew Thomas, especially in the run game, because he's an absolute monster.
Absolutely.
I like Wills. You look at his Auburn film. I thought it was the best film that I saw pretty much of an offensive lineman. Lucas Niang against Ohio State 2 years ago, the year before last, was phenomenal. One-on-one with Nick Bosa, Chase Young, and Draymond Jones throughout the game. Absolutely just destroyed the three of them to the point where they just moved Bosa to the other side because he just couldn't handle it. You know, but then I think you've got a second level of guys. You've got Josh Jones of Houston, who we all like. You've got Niang, I just talked about. You've got Ezra Cleveland, who we've talked about on the WhatsApp, and, you know, is a guy that needs to get stronger and probably needs to just speed up and just be a bit less functional. He's got good feet and, you know, awful against Florida State, but, you know, clearly as well, like Matthew Peart, who we all like at UConn. Then there's Austin Jackson, who to me looks like a third rounder, but, you know, you keep hearing that he could go in the first round. And so, yeah, I think it's a good group. I think it's an interesting group. I think there's some interesting players there. And you go right the way down, like somebody like Sadiq Charles at LSU, who's had some serious off-field issues, but is a really good player. Jack Driscoll at Auburn, you know, was going to go to the Senior Bowl and was injured. But I know that Jim Nagy really liked, you know, the scouts that worked with Jim Nagy were big fans of Driscoll. And Chris and I have talked about him. You know, he looks like an instant starter at right tackle. So there's good players there. There's really good players. And even like you got guys like, you know, Robert Hunt, kids that can probably kick inside to guard the Louisiana guy. It's a really good class, I think, of tackles.
Chris?
Yeah, I think that, you know, just to echo. First off, the left tackle, right tackle thing is – that sort of needs addressing because Andrew Thomas is a left tackle. Mekhi Becton has been a left tackle, but he's played right tackle before. Yes. Jedrick Wills and Tristan Wirfs are both right tackles. Josh Jones is the left tackle. So the left tackles for sure are Josh Jones and Andrew Thomas. Mekhi Becton, you're sort of wondering which one is his best position. I mean, if he really is sort of an analog to the guy who was with what was his name that was with the Patriots for a year and got paid out in Oakland.
Nate Solder?
No, Trent Brown.
Trent Brown. If he really is an analog with Trent Brown, you know, is he going to move over to the right side just like Trent Brown did? He's 6'7", 369 pounds. It's certainly fit Trent Brown, right tackle looking kind of guy. The left tackles are Josh Jones and Andrew Thomas, and the left tackles are honestly not as good as some of the right tackles. I like Andrew Thomas. I like him a lot, but is he, you know, as a left tackle in this business in the NFL, you make your bones by being a great pass protector. No, yeah. I mean, that's the way it is. And Andrew Thomas is a good pass protector. Is he a great pass protector? I don't know. Is he like a Ronnie Stanley? I don't know. So we'll see. I think actually the best pass protector between the two at left tackle, and therefore might end up being known somehow one way or another as the best tackle in out of this draft, is probably, or could be, Josh Jones. Mm-hmm. I think that he's legitimately good. I'm really confused by him because he wasn't as good the year before last. And he's, you know, rarely do you see a guy just be a different player. Usually they make, you know, one or two little improvements and some, it starts to work out and they become more productive or they get better stats or something like that.
He had some coaching turnover that I think helped.
Well, he's had some major coaching turnover the entire time at Houston. So, you know, he was a different player this last year. And then you're like, well, yeah, but he faced really crap competition. But he did so well. Yeah, he did really, really well at the Senior Bowl too, though. So on tape, he looks like the best left tackle to me as far as pass protection goes. But the best player is Tristan Wirfs to me at Iowa. And that's a right tackle. I think that he should be the first one off the board. And I think that the Dolphins would be really lucky to get a hold of him, especially if they have Tua Tagovailoa and you're sort of agnostic on whether your best tackle is your right tackle or your left tackle. We've talked about that in the past, how it's not a slam dunk that your right tackle is suddenly the blindside guy and needs to be your best one, because we've looked in the, you know, we looked at the past and Boomer Esiason and he had what's his name at left tackle, Anthony Munoz, and you know, we've looked at other guys that had really great left tackles,
Steve Young and Steve Wallace and
Mark Brunell, you know, and so Tony Boselli. So yeah, I think that it's not a slam dunk whether you want your right guy, your right tackle, your left tackle to be your absolute best guy. So I'd like them to be open at that number 18 spot. Whoever they're going to get, it's got to be the best one. But I wouldn't be surprised if they end up with Josh Jones. I think that you brought up Lucas Niang, who's a good candidate as a right tackle. I love Matthew Peart a lot. And I think that he's a really good player, deserves to be in that second round, maybe in bottom of the first round area. I think that Sadiq Charles should be in that area by all rights. It's just that he, you know, has the history.
Head case.
Yeah, head case.
He's a guy that the Dolphins have spent a lot of time, you know, one of the four or five teams that have been most interested in him.
And they should, because think about it this way. You don't get left tackles after the first round usually, right? I mean, and yet this is a guy that could play left tackle that you can get after the first round. So you're looking at, say, if in the first round, say they do get their hands on a right tackle first before they're able to get a left tackle. Well, Sadiq Charles is the guy that you can go ahead and take and might have a chance of being that left tackle for you sometime later. So yeah, you figure that one out because the stakes are high with him and he's a really good player, very, very athletic, for that left tackle spot. So I think that's the way I have it. You know, Mekhi Becton, we've talked about a lot. I don't know if your opinion, Simon, has your opinion been changing on him at all? Because I keep bringing up, he didn't really set back in pass protection that often.
Yeah, that's the one concern. Protection. That's the one concern, because you tend to get, because he's such a kind of planet theory guy, and you tend to just get overwhelmed by, especially when he's pulling and moving and just crushing people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you one thing. Proper NFL pass sets from him.
Yeah, I think it's really impressive to watch him on film, and when he gets out moving, he doesn't miss people. He actually finds people to hit, and that's usually a trait that these giant guys don't have, and he has it.
Well, he moves his feet for a 6'7" and 370-pound dude.
Absolutely.
Like, now, he moves his feet better than Trent Brown does.
Now, I was going to ask – let me ask both of you this. In all my mock drafts, I don't see any of the big four getting to 18. So, naturally, if you want one of them, you're going to have to move up from 18. Now, I contend – there's two teams, the Browns and the Jets, that I think are going to be intransigent, okay, at their spots. They're not going to give you their pick because they're going to want one of these tackles. So I think it's even harder to move up from 18 to get one of these tackles than it is to move from 5 to 1. Do you agree, Simon?
It just depends who the trade, because let's take a team like Tampa picking at 14. I mean, the Buccaneers are going to want to tackle. Do you know what I mean? And they could be a team that
help moves. Brady.
I just think, yeah, to help Brady. I mean, the interior of that line in Tampa's nice. You know, with the guy that used to be the center at Baltimore, and then obviously the left guard, who's one of the best young player, best kind of most underrated, Ali Marpet. So I think they'll be looking to move up, and because Demar Dotson's a free agent, Donovan Smith hasn't been great. They're a team that will be in the mix. I just think the Dolphins, unless you're potentially looking to move from 18 to 10, 11 maybe, then what are you giving up to do that? Are you giving up a first rounder to do that? You probably are. So the question is for the Dolphins whether or not, you stay at 18, you get yourself a Josh Jones, or do you give up potentially a first round pick to move up to whichever tackle then falls to 9, 10, 11 because you want to get in front of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So we shall see. But I would be surprised if one of those top four was still there.
I don't know if the top four, to me, it's never been a top four. It's always been a top five anyway with the tackles, because I think I include Josh Jones in there, and I think that he's going to be probably available at 18. So I would say, why trade up? I mean, Tristan Wirfs would be the only guy that would make me tempted, because I think that he is so potentially special. But why trade up when I'm just going to name off guys, and we've already done this, but just name off guys aside from Josh Jones, even you can still get a hold of Matthew Parrott. You can still get a hold of Lucas Niang. You can still get a hold of Sadiq Charles. You can still get a hold of Ben Bartsch. Okay. We haven't talked about him.
Good player.
You can still get a hold of Ezra Cleveland, a guy you mentioned, Jack Driscoll, who I was just, he did, by the way, participate in the Shrine game.
Did he?
And he was, he was phenomenal. I mean, he went up against one of the most productive pass rushers in the country, in Derek Tusk of North Dakota State during the game, and who tested pretty well and not too bad, by the way. And he just looked like I always watch him, and I think, not to get off on a rant about Jack Driscoll, but he reminds me a little bit of Mitchell Schwartz. I think that he just handles his business really, really well at all times and knows exactly what he's doing. And yet at the same time, when he has to reach for some of that athleticism to really kick back with some force to handle a guy that's got some speed, he has it. He actually has it. He's a pretty good athlete. So I think that he's one to watch. But yeah, when you can get a hold of any of those guys, then why are we giving up those picks to trade up for somebody like Andrew Thomas or Mekhi Becton, or even, Jedrick Wills, as much as I like him? Tristan Wirfs is the only guy that would make me personally think about it, but even so, like, just sit tight, take a couple of tackles. You're going to make your team better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Now, if the Dolphins played a game tomorrow, they're not going to play a game tomorrow, and quite frankly, they can't. But if they were to play a game tomorrow, there will be nobody standing there at right guard because they actually don't have one on the roster, really. Okay?
Jesse Davis.
Well, he's the right tackle right now.
No, he's not really, though, is he?
He's not really anything, is he?
By the way, just on Jack Driscoll, 1,690 pass block snaps, 4 quarterback hits, no sacks.
Yeah. I mean, he's a really underrated player. He's really good. I think a lot of people are surprised. I was surprised. I looked at him. He didn't in practices. I just, this isn't an eyeball test guy.
Just as flat out good player.
He's just flat out good player.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, if they played a game and they're not, but if they were, there'd be nobody standing there at right guard unless you're going to plug in Jesse Davis. But then you have a big hole at right tackle. And you got to think they got to draft a right guard or a right tackle in this draft to start, because this offensive line is essentially barren as of right now. Simon, what do you like as far as guards that fit that mold?
I mean, to me, the best guard in the draft, but it comes with a huge exclamation mark or whatever it is Nate Muti of Utah. A huge asterisk. I think he is a phenomenal talent when he's healthy. The question is that can he stay healthy? I mean, he's played 18 games in 4 years, which suggests that no, he can't stay healthy. But I think, and I don't say this lightly, he has a Larry Allen type skill set when he is fit and firing.
I've never seen anybody sustain their blocks as long as he does and as consistently.
No. I mean, to me, Jonah Jackson played 1 year at Ohio State at Rutgers the year before, 3 years before, can play left, right side. I think he's just a really smooth, really good player. I think Damian Lewis is a pure right guard, an absolute mauler, big, nasty, knows how to finish. I like John Simpson at Clemson, a ton of experience, 2,000 snaps for Clemson, just a really good power mover. I really like Robert Hunt as well, who can play inside, outside. And the scout said to me that he reminds him of a sort of a more raw Lyle Collins. And he played right tackle, but could kick inside. You look at Cameron Clark, a guy that we talked about. Kevin Dotson's another guy that I really like. Clark at Charlotte, Dotson at Louisiana. Danny Pinter at Ball State is a guy that I think can play guard, can play center. A little bit undersized, but is a really powerful kid. I just think the offensive line is a real. You know, the Dolphins need help, and I think they could potentially make hay all across the offensive line because there's some really good players here.
Okay, now let me ask you this before we move on to Chris. 18 months ago, I always like to do this. I like to look at what people were saying 18 months ago as far as different positions in the draft and, you know, who was rated number one at that position, let's say 18 months ago. 18 months ago, it was almost a consensus that the best guards in the draft were Shane Lemieux of Oregon and John Simpson. Since then, it's hard to find people to put them in their top four or maybe even five. What's happened to them? Simon.
I don't think anything's happened to them necessarily. I like Lemieux. I think he's a good player.
I think he's one of my favorites still.
Yeah, I think he's a good player.
I got him as the fifth-ranked interior offensive lineman.
I probably have him, to be honest, I'd probably have him as the sixth guy from my list. I think he's a
really good. Well, are we including the centers here? Or?
No, this is just – well, I've just gone guards. I've got a different center list.
Just guards.
I mean, I wonder how much – you know, he plays next to the best left tackle in college football in Pinar Sewell. Will be a top three pick next year. So you wonder how much that helps. But he is a good player in his own right. I mean, we've not even talked about Ben Bredesen or Solomon Kinley or Tremaine Ankrum. Or, you know, there's guys.
Logan Stenberg.
You know, there's guys all over the Calvin Throckmorton, the guy that played right tackle at Oregon, I think should kick inside, could be a guard, probably could be a center.
I think he could be a center.
Yeah, I mean, so I think there's just really good guys throughout the throughout the draft, I've got to say.
I think Shane Lemieux is actually just one of my flat-out favorites at the guard position. I think that
4 year star, you know, All-American, team captain. Mm. Yeah, what more do you want?
What more do you want? I mean, just naming the names, like you said, you've mentioned most of them already, but, you know, you can give me Natane Muti, I'll be happy. You can give me Damian Lewis, I'll be happy. Shane Lemieux, I'll be happy. This is in no particular order. John Simpson, I'll be happy. Robert Hunt, I'll be happy. Jonah Jackson, I'll be happy. You know, there's a lot of guys here that could help you at the guard position. I mean, Cameron Clark was a phenomenal left tackle. I know he can move inside to guard and play really well. I think that There's a lot of help that inside that you can get in this draft, and forgetting, you know, who knows on some of these centers if they could even move over to guard a little bit depending on what you've got on your roster, they can probably do some damage over there as well. So I think that there's a lot of help here. John Simpson is one of those big burly mothers that you just know are going to play in the NFL for 10 years. And he's going to do really well. I mean, he might not move as well as some other guys. But neither is Jonah Jackson, I don't think. So I think that you can shoot for the, you can really shoot for the moon with Natane Muti. I think that the same could also be kind of true of Shane Lemieux. He reminds me of Muti a little bit. So, and tons of help there. We'll get to the centers too, but I think that you can go and again, don't forget about Cameron Clark. He's a really good player.
A guy that I can't get, you know, I can't really.
Hold on a minute. Sorry.
Figure him as
three,
much.
3, 2, 1, off we go.
Sorry.
We go again. Nice. Hello. And
what the hell?
Fuck! How can I sort of? Sorry, I had to download something.
You not only do you get this one, you get two podcasts when you listen to 3 yards per carry.
Sorry.
Yeah, this break, we're just going to give you.
I was just downloading that from WeTransfer, and I forgot it was going. All of a sudden, it was like, I want to play.
A guy who looks the part, but I just don't see it, and maybe I'm wrong, is Tyree Phillips of Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Does he belong in this group?
No, not for me.
Not for me. I mean, that's I've looked into it. I'm not even that big on Ben Bredesen, to be honest, of Michigan. I think that he might be a little overrated in my eyes. But there's another guy from Rhode Island, Kyle Murphy, who is built exactly right. I think that he moves well, and keep an eye on him. He's another small school guy. He was at the Shrine game. I think that there's upside there when he's being taught well.
Yeah. Okay. And Damian Lewis is my guy. I think that's who I like. I think they can get him with one of those second round picks. He's going to be one of the higher ranked guards for most teams. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll be one of the first guards off the board. I'd love him at maybe, I don't know about 39, but I'd be tempted. Unless Lucas Niang is on the board at 39, I would take Lucas Niang.
The issue with Niang is, and the Dolphins is, if they take Tua with the injury issues, you know, do you then want to spend two of your first four picks? Because Lucas Niang obviously coming off the Achilles injury. Mm-hmm. Do you want two of your first four picks coming back off injuries? That to me is a big question mark. And I think that's why I know that they spent a lot of time with Robert Hunt on FaceTime and stuff. He was going to be one of their 30 visits. Now, the kid at Louisiana is tough and hard nosed, play outside, inside. I do wonder if they take it to whether or not they take the risk with Niang coming off the injury, as good as he is. That to me would be an issue.
Well, the Dolphins did some work on the center position this offseason. They jettisoned Daniel Kilgore and they added Ted Karras. Excited, Simon?
About Ted Karras? I'd be more excited if I was told I was going to have my penis removed and sewed onto the back of my head.
Which brings us to the draft. You see that segue? You see how I did that? You see how I did that, Simon?
That's next episode.
Yeah. No, I'm not excited by Ted Karras. Look, what I think Karras is a really good backup at all three interior positions. What I thought last year watching the Patriots is that, you know, that their offense is so predicated on that screen game. And Karras, what David Andrews used to do so well was be able to get out of the perimeter and essentially just mow guys over. And Karras just doesn't have the athletic ability to do that. And their offense suffered, especially with, you know, the diminishing returns from Brady's arm, which it didn't fall off completely, obviously. But, you know, he's not the guy he was 10 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're trying to rely on that screen game. You're just not able to do so because your center isn't athletic enough to get outside. And that, for me, would be a concern. But I think, again, you know, we've pretty much, like we've talked about most positions, there's guys at center I really like in this draft, you know, so I don't think Ted Karras is the guy. And I'd be frightened to think that, I'm glad it's just a 1 year deal, because I just think, I really hope they don't just think we've sorted center now. Ted's going to play there. He's going to be unchallenged. We don't need to look at some of these really good guys that can play center. I really hope that's not the case.
I do too. And, you know, he's a guy that reminds me that the most defining, I guess, characteristic of, as you say, a really good backup at the three positions is that you don't want them starting.
Yeah, exactly.
and that's Ted Karras for you. I would hate to think that they're done just because they've got Ted Karras and Michael Dieter competing together as center.
Yeah.
That would suck for me. I know that you can't do everything in one offseason, right? You know that.
Yeah, cool.
They got enough picks too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but yes and no. I mean, you can't really get everything everything you want in one off season. And yeah, they've signed Ted Karras at center. He's on a 1 year deal. And we'll see, but God, it would really suck if they just, you know, I'm not even counting Lloyd Cushenberry. I think he's a pretty good center prospect. He's obviously got arms for days, but Simon, your guy, Damian Lewis, every time I look at the LSU pairing, I think Lewis just outshines him.
Yeah.
And I don't think Cushenberry's an excellent player yet.
We've both got a guy here at center that we both think, you know, me with Ruiz, you with Hennessy, that you just think, I really hope that, you know, the Dolphins aren't done at center, like you say, because to pass on one of these guys, even Tyler Biadasz,
absolutely,
you know, not to pass on one of these, to pass on one of these guys just would make you, to me, it's not good.
If you get one of those three, and for me, it is Hennessy, I think that he could be special. I think that he's a special center in the making. You get one of those three, between Biadasz and Hennessy or Ruiz. Or Cushenberry. I mean, be honest. Somewhere down the road, he could be pretty good. Then, yeah, you're doing a lot better than just, I guess, settling for Ted Karras. And I hope they have that in mind. I hope that they're open minded to it. But hey, they don't have every pick in the top three rounds, right? So we'll have to see.
We need God, even Darrell Williams at Mississippi State, a guy I really like. You just think, you know, move from guard to center as a senior and tough and versatile and team leader and those kind of things. I just, you know, I like you say, just don't want to be done in that position.
Yeah, well, another guy that I find, I find him interesting because of what he's done is Jake Hansen of Oregon. Now, the knock on him is that he's not going to particularly test well because he's not particularly strong. He's not athletic. So, you know, so what else, you know, so besides that, you know, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? Mm-hmm. But I don't see what's wrong with him as far as a late round draft pick.
The knock on him is that he plays next to Pinar Sewell and Shane Lemieux.
Yeah, but somehow.
And Calvin Throckmorton.
Yeah.
But somehow he had a C on his chest at one point. So coaches like him. On a team that, you know, with that much talent on the offensive line, I don't know. I don't see what's so wrong about him that's basically dumped him down all these draft boards that I'm
Nick
watching
Harris right is now. Another kid I like, the kid at Washington, you know.
Yeah.
I think he can play as well.
I think he's smallish and he's he's smallish and he doesn't make up for it by being a great athlete either. You know, I worry about him jumping up to the next level because I look for guys that are a little bit, you know, impressive, I guess. And that's why you can fall into danger with that because you look at Jack Driscoll and it's like, well, he's not going to impress you with the eyeball test, but he's just a phenomenal player. I'm trying to be open-minded that way with Nick Harris, but it doesn't stand out for me. But, Alf, the guy, if you're going to go with, you know, Oregon center, I mean, to me, I would take Throckmorton and move him to center instead of taking Jake Hansen. I think that Throckmorton is the more impressive player in general, and I think that he's open to moving to center. He played some center and I believe the Senior Bowl. So
yeah, I have no problems at all with Matt Hennessy, Tyler Biadasz, Cesar Ruiz, Lloyd Cushenberry. I think all four are good players, but we're running out of draft picks here.
I've got some Barry Jackson offensive line news if you want it, because we talked earlier on about Kevin Dotson and Robert Hunt, who would have been 30 visits. According to a source, the Dolphins also previously invited Southern Cal offensive tackle Austin Jackson to team headquarters for one of their 30 permitted draft visits, but had to cancel. Dolphins have also had conversations with Iowa offensive tackle Tristan Wirfs. Meanwhile, the Dolphins have been doing video conference sessions with several offensive linemen that interest them, including Georgia left tackle Andrew Thomas. And two potential second-day centers who can play guard, Temple's Matt Hennessy and Washington's Nick Harris. Mm. This is literally just broken on the Herald. It says Hennessy, Roberts, Wisconsin center Tyler Biadasz, LSU center Lloyd Cushenberry, and Michigan center Cesar Ruiz. Miami has varying interests in each of them. Hunt, Oregon, Shane Lemieux, and Ben Bredesen are considered among the top guards. There you go.
Well, a lot of those I'd be perfectly happy with. you know, add him to the offensive line. I think
a guy late in the draft, and we did one of our podcasts about the offseason. I had this guy as a 6th round pick, and I wonder if he goes a little higher. And that's Sean Pollard of Clemson. He's played tackle, he's played guard, he's played center. He's going to be a center in the NFL. Good size for a team that's that good. He was the captain of the offensive line 2 consecutive years on an offensive line that had John Simpson. So I think he's worth a look as well. And
I've got some more here. Zach Moss, a guy the Dolphins have done a video session with. Dolphins have shown interest in Utah defensive tackle Leki Fotu. Did a video session with him. They've interviewed several of the
predicted. They need a nose tackle, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Don't
they?
They don't have a zero right now.
Nah. They've also interviewed several of the projected day 3 or free agent quarterbacks. They've shown strong interest in FIU's James Morgan.
Yep, a lot of teams have, actually.
2 team officials, including Titans coach George Godsey, interview Michigan's Shea Patterson. Dolphins also interviewed James Madison's Ben DiNucci.
John Jenkins is still floating out in the ether.
Simon Stepeniak, as well as a guy they've interviewed, the Indiana guard.
Do we bring him back, Chris? John Jenkins?
With John Jenkins? I mean, they could, certainly. Now we're straying into the defense. But, yeah, I mean, I think they could bring him back. But I think they will want to see what they – and the last piece, clearly, that they're missing along the defensive line, I think the defensive front is sort of that big body nose tackle type. And so we'll see who they go after that way. You could even see that being up top somewhere if the tackle that they want doesn't drop down to them, but somehow Derek Brown does. then you could see them really go for it. And I know that we know that they worked out Marlon Davidson, the Auburn defensive players, really hard. Devon Hamilton obviously is a really strong player.
Great for that player.
Especially since, you know, his issue we've talked about, Simon, you leave him on the field for too long and you got problems. But in the Dolphins defense, they wouldn't leave him on the field too long. That's not what they would be asking him to do. So fit right in and just go out and dominate.
You look at him early in games and you're just like, you are an absolute machine.
Yeah.
But then, you know, later on, yeah, he's going to be a guy that is going to suffer in the South Florida heat, but he's a good player, a really good player.
But, you know, you look at what they did with Danny Shelton and New England and those sorts of guys. They don't leave those guys on the field.
No, exactly.
For a long time.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think that there's a place for him, and certainly Leki Fotu as well. I mean, that's
100%.
Great name too.
Yeah, right up top among the guys that you would consider. And I think that there's another guy, I'm forgetting is it Darian Daniels?
Yes, the Nebraska guy.
Yeah, they could consider him. He's 6'4", 322 pounds. I know that they're gonna take a look at him.
Well,
I've got to go to bed.
Yes, you do. This was your offensive part 1 2020 NFL draft preview. Next week we will get into the defense, and Dolphins did a lot of work on the defensive end this year in free agency, so they might not be too active in that end, but they do need some defensive backs. They might need a 5 tech, they need a 0 for sure, and they might need another linebacker. So maybe 4 guys that they might target for the draft.
They're definitely bringing a corner as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
they can't help themselves.
I don't think they're going to use all 14, but I would say the majority is going to go on offense, but they might need 4 guys to contribute on the defense. So we'll be talking about that next week, but that's next week. This week was your offensive preview of the NFL draft. Enjoy.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Caddy. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.